We're going to keep the show going now by talking about a new documentary that has just come out. It's called I'm Smart Too. It's locally produced and locally focused. It's all about an issue that has been nagging our public schools for a very long time. It's something that has been much talked about, but a problem that still persists, the achievement gap in Chapel Hill Carrboro City schools in particular, and schools in general, certainly, but Chapel Hill Carrboro is where the documentary is focused. This documentary is called I'm Smart Too, and it's about the achievement gap, but also about the history of the legacy of segregation in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City School District and what that means for education today. Joined by two of the producers of I'm Smart Too, Kim Talikoff and Alex Odom. Kim, Alex, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
Thank you for having us.
It's great to be here, Aaron. Thank you.
Awesome. So how did the project all come together? Start with that.
Well, I probably should take the lead on that one. So I had the really great fortune of teaching in the public schools for 4 years, from 2013 through 2017. And I was in the elementary schools specifically. And I would say that it was my experiences there that drove me to, that motivated me to try to make this project happen. I think that as I worked in the classrooms and started collecting experiences and became cognizant of the way that the system functioned, I couldn't help but feel over time that I was sort of witnessing and not just participating a problem that needed to change. And so when I stepped back from the classroom, one of the things that I was looking to do was to sort of advocate for teachers and parents and students to make some significant change, because it was very hard to affect that while teaching. So I looked around this film medium, trying to show people what I could see and learn along the way, seemed like the ideal way to begin. And so I looked around and found people super willing to be part of a team and learned a ton through participation with my colleagues.
Awesome. Why did you find it difficult to advocate from the classroom?
Well, I think that what some people know, especially teachers know, teaching in a classroom setting is a pretty immersive job, right? Mm-hmm. It takes a ton of time, especially if you're super committed to the project. And I think that, so there's just that time and energy. But then the second thing is, our systems are not really structured to listen to teacher voices, right? There is not really effective upstream communication that happens regularly. And in order to gain traction, sometimes you have to step outside the classroom to be able to speak more directly and honestly to the issues that are in play in the classrooms.
Over to Alex Odom. You are a grad student at UNC, is
yes,
that right? How
that
did you get
correct.
Involved?
So I am a fourth year graduate student in the history PhD program at UNC here. And so actually, one of my professors had known Kim, and she was kind of telling him about the project, recommended me for it. So we sat down and we met, and she kind of told me about what it was that she was hoping to accomplish. Kind of explained to me the landscape of the issue. When I had joined the project, they had already kind of started doing some interviews. And so in undergrad, I did a lot of work with education. My school didn't necessarily have an education major, but I spent like 4 years in and out of classrooms in Grinnell, Iowa. I mean, I regularly go back and volunteer at my high school back in Baltimore, Baltimore City College. So shout out to them. And so this was definitely something that was along my line of interest. And so as a historian, I was really excited to kind of dig more into the local history and really kind of think about how it was that we could connect the project that they were working on to a longer history of desegregation within the state of North Carolina and Chapel Hill more specifically.
So what's the issue today? I watched the documentary. It's a fascinating piece. It's terrific, and everyone should check it out, and we'll talk about how people can. So I want to walk through the documentary, but let's start with the present day. What currently exists in terms of the achievement gap and existing problems?
And I think one of the things that really struck me when I joined the project, and also once I started to kind of talk to some of our subjects, was that a lot of children within the school system are really internalizing a lot of these messages that they're being sent and a lot of the messages that they're being told about what their capacity is. Even if these messages aren't explicit, even if these messages aren't something that somebody's sitting down and telling them, because you're a student of color or because you're a black student, you're less capable, their experience in the school system is kind of reinforcing that for them, right? In our first community panel, we had one of the main characters of the film, Bataya, and she was saying, well, I took this gifted test and they told me I'm not gifted, but I'm 13 years old and I know all of the parts of a car engine. So it's obvious that they're really evaluating my ability or my capacity based on a very set metric that isn't really transparent to me. I'm not really understanding how it is that they're doing this. But then she walked away from that experience feeling really dejected and discouraged. And so kind of, and this wasn't a new feeling for her because this is something that she had kind of been experiencing throughout the school system. So I think really thinking about the real live experience of the children who are behind the achievement gap. There's multiple articles that have been kind of circulated throughout the community that have come out nationally that talk about this achievement gap, but it doesn't really get into how is it that the students are receiving this message and what kind of attitudes are they having in the school system because of that.
Yeah, and that's a message that gets manifested to students in a whole bunch of different ways, right?
And really early, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's, and it comes from all directions. And I think one of the most important things that I wanted to emphasize, and I'm glad that we can raise in this conversation, is that teachers, and many of them, are struggling really valiantly to push back against that kind of that messaging. But it's really a hard thing to try to convey to a group of students that that they are capable in it, and the capability grows mm-hmm. over time when you're working within a system that signals in every way that intelligence is fixed, right? So we have to be looking carefully at the system and seeing where the structure of the system and the programming, the design of programming puts systems into place that maintain this messaging.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with the way that students are tracked, right? From very early, right? Like kindergarten, first grade, some people are put on the gifted track or the college track, and others are put on the normal track. Like, I don't know if there's a word for it, but there's that separation, right? And it happens very early.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen within every classroom in the sense of there's not a pullout in kindergarten, for example, but there is something called ability grouping that happens inside classrooms. And for teachers to be able to work with a group of students who have very different capacities and different experiences, actually, I should withdraw that, have different experiences and bring different previous opportunities integrated into their learning already to the table, teachers have a hard time trying to work within that context, and so they resort to this thing called ability grouping that is essentially the precursor to formalized tracking, and that's laid down sort of extremely early.
Yeah. How does that connect with the history of schools in Chapel Hill?
And so one of the things that we really wanted to kind of think about was we wanted to talk about, well, in that documentary and in our research, we spent hours upon hours kind of going through like documents from as far back as like the moment of desegregation, right? Looking at the Orange County Training School, looking at what actually happened in these processes of desegregation. And one of the things that we found, and one of the most prominent narratives, is when Chapel Hill kind of made this attempt to desegregate the schools, it wasn't necessarily one of the things that one of our subjects calls a co-equal partnership. It was really the black schools being absorbed into these white schools, right? And so from some of our subjects' personal experience, what that meant was they were in an environment as black students where they were around students and around teachers that had not really formally thought about how do we equally integrate these students into our schools, right? How do we create an environment where these students can thrive now that they are in a school system that has predominantly white teachers, where they are in a classroom with white students for a lot of them the first time in their lives, right? How do we make it so that we can kind of create a school environment that takes into account all of the things that all of these communities value and really preserves some of like the strongest parts of both school systems? And how does that kind of perpetuate these inequalities, right? We were looking at the history of the state of North Carolina, right? How is it that local governments are really paying attention to gifted programs, right? There's a long history of people kind of coming into different school systems and saying, oh, it looks as though all of the white students are in this advanced course, but all of the black students are not. How is that happening? Is there a legitimate reason for this? And in many cases, it is not. So thinking about how all of those problems kind of just repeat themselves and recycle themselves, but then also looking at some of the efforts to change this too, right? Like, this isn't something that people have not been talking about. We certainly wanted to make it clear that we are not the first people to bring light to this problem. We are not the first people to do any kind of research on this problem. And there's people who have really gone far and beyond what we could ever attempt to do in this 2-year project to study it. However, there have not really been what people have felt have made lasting changes. Mm-hmm. And so really acknowledging that this is not a new issue, this is not new research, and they're not new, these are not new suggestions, but really bringing the community together and asking what can we do differently and how can we really attack this problem from a different angle. And a lot of that has to do with understanding the breadth of this system and not just saying, okay, this is a problem in the schools, but really as a community, what do we value and how can we make sure that our school system represents that?
Speaking with Alex Odom, you just heard her, Kim Talikoff. Also, the documentary is called I'm Smart Too, and you can find out more about it and watch it. Watch it or watch the trailer?
The trailer is up online right now.
I'msmart2.org is the website, so you can get more information there. And, we're talking about the issue. The documentary also gets into solutions, and Alex, as you mentioned, this is going to be a much longer conversation than we can do, solve all the problems in a short documentary. But one of the solutions that is being offered is to take those two different tracks, the gifted and the quote-unquote normal track, and kind of eliminate the tracking system, which, as someone who grew up as a quote-unquote gifted student and really benefited from that education, that always, the red flag always pops up for me. And then the way that you describe it in the film, really, like, it clicked into place. It's not eliminate the gifted track, it's eliminate the quote-unquote normal track and give everyone the opportunity to have that, the gifted education, to have those opportunities. I think that's terrific.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that has been borne out in the literature is that all kids benefit from that type of education, mm-hmm. Not just a subset of kids. In fact, Dr. Darity has cited previously work that was done over in Durham, where there was a elementary school called Southwest Elementary, where this was actually what was put in place. And they were able to document significant gains in a very short period of time. So there are some precedents and there are some models to look towards. And certainly, as I just mentioned, the academic literature supports the idea of providing that service to everybody, for everyone to get benefits.
The downside of that, and this is something that's kind of hinted at in the film, is you do have students who don't have those opportunities going in, who might feel inadequate mm-hmm. when grouped with everyone else. And you also just mentioned the student who's really, really good at fixing a car and not so much at the type of education that you get from the quote-unquote gifted program. How do you address that?
Yeah, I think that I'm probably not the best person to speak to that, but I would say that people in the education system who have a lot of experience and have thought that through carefully, including someone in our film, Professor Domina, mm-hmm. I think that what he thinks about doing, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, is just really being thoughtful about how we use categorization and kind of rethinking the structures and thinking about what we can do to support teachers in ways that they can be more flexible. The other thing that I would say is that I think that what we're encouraging people to do is to think about turning attention to what happens in the early years as well. As a community, I think it's going to be really important for us to be really thoughtful about how we design and support early education opportunities and what we want to do as a community to make sure that those experiences are rich in the most broad sense of the term, are really focused on fostering positive relationships, and how they can align with our objectives in the schools. And I also think it's really important for us to think about what we're trying to accomplish in our schools. Like, what are our objectives? As Professor Domina says in the film, like, we can't make more seats at the top. We're not going to get everybody into Harvard. But what we can do is work to make a lot of geniuses, right? We can optimize everyone's potential. And is that really not what we all want in our school system?
Mm-hmm. And I think we made an explicit choice to have these first showings accompanied by these community panels, right? One of the things that we really think is important is this really does need to be a community conversation. Of course, us on the team, we have our own ideas about what might be the next first step. We have our own ideas looking at the research and looking at all of the things that we have kind of poured over in production. However, we can't really make suggestions to the school system. We really think that this is a decision that needs to be had and a conversation that needs to be had in the broader community, right? And so when we asked this question in our first panel, I mean, what we heard from students about what they thought the next step would be. We heard from parents about what we heard from academics who have kind of studied these issues for a long time. And I think that it really does require drawing from all of these different pockets of the community and really thinking, okay, how can we kind of come together to tackle this problem?
I want to talk about the reaction, and you're just talking about it. Did you get any kind of surprising responses that you weren't expecting? What's the reaction been?
I don't know. necessarily know that I was surprised by this, but I think I was definitely delighted to see the ways that recent graduates and current students are talking about this, right? So we had two of the people in our film really speak to what it is that they wanted to see in their school system and what it is that they recall from their years in the school system. And so knowing students know what's happening. I think a lot of time when people talk about school systems, it's talking about the administration, talking about maybe the PTA, talking about the school board, talking about teachers, principals. But what do the students really see in the school system, and how is it that they think that those things can be attacked from inside of the classroom? Because just like the teachers are there having a firsthand look at what's happening, the students are there as well. And they have their own ideas about how it is that they can be valued within their classrooms, and they know the kind of education that they want to receive.
Speaking with Alex Odom and Kim Talikoff, we've got to wrap up, unfortunately. But other things that folks ought to know. I know there's a screening coming up next week, right, that folks can actually watch this for themselves.
Sure. On Wednesday the 21st at 7:30, we're going to have a virtual screening. And you can go to our website and register there. It's only a half-hour film, so it doesn't take too much time. But we hope everyone stays for the panel discussion that we're going to have and the Q&A afterwards, because we'd really just like to have as many people in our community engaged in these conversations, because solutions are going to come from us joining together, trying to really collaborate on creating solutions that are bold and honest.
And as a budding historian, I think I also just want to add, our website really was intended to be a community resource, right? Like, we have all of the sources that we have used for this project. We have timelines. We have links. There's a lot of things on there that really do help to contextualize the nature of the issue and the long history that is attached to our present moment. And one of the reasons why we did that was because we thought that it was important for us to kind of give that to the community as well, right? So we are more than happy to have people access those resources. As we have said, we are not the premier experts on this issue at all. We definitely do want to open up, be transparent and open that up to the community. So as well as finding more information about our next viewings, that people can also go to our website and find out more information about local history and what's been going on in Chapel Hill for the last few decades as well.
Awesome. The website is imsmart2.org, and the screening is next week, Wednesday. You can get more information on that at the website, plus a whole lot more about the film and the issue and the people behind it. Kim Talikoff, Alex Odom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Thanks, Aaron.